And corporations are actually legal fictions.
That's correct. That's the legal term for a corporation, is that it's a legal fiction.
So it's, you know, so all these laws that we have to, in fact, we're running out of time. We have just a couple of minutes left. Let's take an example. Let's take an example of a corporation using this and the ramifications that we see because of it. JCPenney in the 1930s in Florida.
Right. Most communities around the United States had laws that that encouraged local businesses, that they wanted to nurture small entrepreneurial ventures and keep small business people in business. This was the heart of most communities, and they wanted to discourage large out-of-state corporations. They realized it was necessary for some of them, like, you know, the Standard Oil Company and stuff. I mean, they weren't drilling oil in every community, so they had to have some interaction with big companies. So what they did was they placed a higher business fee on big companies. JCPenney came in and said, this is illegal discrimination under the 14th Amendment, the Free the Slaves Amendment, as if it was like blacks versus whites or something. And they said, you know, you can't put these barriers in the way. You can't. It was actually a difference between a $25 license to do business per year for JCPenney versus a $5 license to do business per year for a local business. And they sued over $20, took it to the Supreme Court, and they won. And their having won that case is why communities today can't keep Walmarts out.
Walmarts and all the other businesses, the strip malls, the chains that we have. You know, chain is an interesting use of the word chain because it has its images in slavery. And
yeah.
Its chains are the term we use. And in most of the cases that cited the 14th Amendment had nothing to do with slaves.
That's right. Justice Hugo Black pointed out that less than 0.5% of all the cases before the court based on the 14th Amendment were had to do with freeing people of African American ancestry, and the balance of the cases had to do with corporations seeking human rights, seeking this extraordinary power that the founders gave us humans for themselves.
Now we go, we're just about out of time, but there's a great segment here on page 39 of the book, and I have it laid out here in my copy. Why don't you just take that?
Sure.
Yeah, there you go. And Bobby Kennedy says it well, and this will conclude our segment. So we're talking with Tom Hartman. The book is Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights.
In March of 1968, Robert Kennedy raised this issue, challenging the dearly held concept that pure economic activity in and of itself, usually measured as gross national product or GNP, is a truly useful and honest way to measure the impact of corporate activity on the human community and the life of the planet. Kennedy said, "Our gross national product now is over $800 billion a year. But that gross national product, if we judge the United States of America by that, counts air pollution and cigarette advertising, excuse me, and ambulances to clear our highways of carnage. It counts special locks on our doors and jails for the people who break them. It counts the destruction of the redwoods and the loss of our natural wonder in chaotic squall. It counts napalm, and it counts nuclear warheads and armored cars for the police to fight the riots in our cities. It counts Whitman's rifles and Speck's knives and the television programs which glorify violence in order to sell toys to our children. There are also important things," Kennedy said, "that only measuring the flow of cash misses. Yet the gross national product does not allow for the health of our children, the quality of their education, or the joy of their play. It does not include the beauty of our poetry, or the strength of our marriages, the intelligence of our public debate, or the integrity of our public officials. It measures neither our wit nor our courage, neither our wisdom nor our learning, neither our compassion nor our devotion to our country. It measures everything, in short, except that which makes life worthwhile."
Our guest is Tom Hartman. The book is Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. The website for more information, tomhartman.com. Tom is spelled with an H, Hartman with two N's. And we'll have a link on our website at inpeoria.org. We continue now our discussion with Tom Hartman. Because of a mistaken interpretation of a Supreme Court reporter's notes in an 1886 railroad tax case, corporations are now legally considered persons, equal to humans, and entitled to many of the same protections once guaranteed only to humans by the Bill of Rights. The result of this corporate personhood and the potential antidote is the subject matter of a book by Tom Hartman, international relief worker, psychotherapist, father, and author of over a dozen books, including unequal protection, the rise of corporate dominance, and the theft of human rights. This is just delightful to have you on the program, and there's so much to cover. You know, one of the things that you talk about in the book is that you're not on a search for villains.
Yes.
Explain that.
Well, I think it's an important, I think that's a real important point to make. And one of the things that the current administration and that the business community really love to talk about are the perp walks, you know, the criminals, the corporate criminals, corporate crime, corporate integrity, corporate citizenship. These are distractions. In fact, corporate citizenship is an oxymoron. Corporations can't vote. Up until 1886, in most communities in the United States, it was a felony for corporations to insert themselves in the political process, to run ads, to try to influence elections, to try to send people to try and influence legislators. It was a crime. They can't vote. What are they doing in politics? That was the thinking up until 1886. And so now, you know, by saying, oh, well, it's just a few bad apples, to quote George Bush, or it's just these bad people, it makes it seem as if it's bad people in a good corporate structure. The problem really is a structural one, and the main rot of the structure is that corporations have stolen for themselves, and I use that word intentionally. Corporations have stolen for themselves the human rights that were designed only for humans, that are very, very powerful weapons that humans can use to protect themselves from government. Corporations are using these to protect themselves from government, and government is we the people. It's the representative of us. And so they've essentially taken over the political discourse.
Okay, let's play devil's advocate for a moment. You know, you talk about a lack of villains, and you talk about how the structure is, there's a problem with the structure, but you know, doesn't it take a serious lack of consciousness to ignore the consequences of this legal precedent? I mean, come on. I mean, the pollution created by corporations and all the other ramifications of corporate irresponsibility.
Yeah, the reality is that there are some people within the corporate world who are functioning and behaving in a way that perhaps you could even define as being sociopathic, you know, as being disconnected from humanity. We've had people like that with us for 100,000 years. That's a problem, but it's not the problem that's bringing about the meltdown of the planet. The fact of the matter is that in a democracy, people make the decisions about what government will allow and will not allow, because the government is responsive to people, to the voters. And I guarantee you, if you were to go to the worst polluting company in the state of Washington, and you were to poll all of their employees, you would find that the vast majority of their employees are just people trying to get by. They're desperate for a job. They're terrified that they'll lose their health insurance if they get fired. They've got kids. They're raising, you know, there may be a few wackos usually at the top who are behaving in perhaps a sociopathic fashion and realize that what they're doing is killing people. But the vast majority, you know, one time I just got a wild idea when I lived in Atlanta, and I called up the world's largest tobacco company, and the receptionist answered the phone, and I just said to her, how can you sleep at night working for that company? And she said, I've got three kids, I got to put them through school. And it hit me. You know, there's human beings out there. And so the problem is that if we really had a democracy where only humans had human rights, then all those voters who are working for that worst polluting company in the state of Washington would vote for representatives who would regulate and control the pollution from that company, even if it cost that company more in profits. However, once the corporations received personhood and received the power to participate in the political process and swing the political process through the use of their money, they had freedom of speech, they had the voice to speak to politicians, they have so much taken over by virtue of their wealth and power, so much taken over the political process that most politicians now, when they think of their constituents, are thinking of corporate donors. They're not thinking of the individual employees of the company who are the voters. And so what's happened is we've got a situation now where our political apparatus in the United States, from local to national, is responsive to corporations rather than to humans. And that's what's driving the destruction of the environment, among other many very real problems, the destructions of our inner cities and so on.
The senator who needs to raise $4,000 a day to maintain office.
That's right.
And the disempowerment of that person in Atlanta, the receptionist at the tobacco company, and all of the disempowerment that we feel, our vote doesn't matter, and all the other examples of it, well, maybe not all, maybe not 100%, but many of them, you trace back to the modus operandi of the media, the corporate-controlled media.
Yes.
Which job number one is to disempower people. In other words, you smell bad, so you need this underarm deodorant to have sex with beautiful members of the opposite sex.
Yeah, I would say that that's not so much a problem of the media as it is the advertising industry, and I think we need to differentiate the two. The media has certainly been taken over in the United States, particularly since Reagan sold off the airwaves to pay for Star Wars. The media has been taken over by large corporations who have very specific agendas, most of them that track with what we call the right wing, which is why there are, you know, there's all tune across talk radio and you're not going to hear any liberal voices. You're going to hear, you know, nothing but the extreme right, but which really represents the corporate
interests,
yes. But in advertising, and I used to work in the advertising industry, and in advertising, the first imperative is to convince somebody that they need your product. And in order to convince somebody that they need your product, you have to tell them that there's something wrong with them. You know, armpit hair is bad, or facial hair is bad, or it's or they smell bad, or they don't have the, you know, with these clothes you'll be happier, or if you drink this beverage you'll be hip and you'll be in. And then, you know, use our product and you'll be happy. Yeah, certainly. That's the message of advertising.
This is in sync with what Spengler predicted.
Yeah, Oswald Spengler and his Decline of the West, and you know, Vance Packard, The Hidden Persuaders, and there's been, you know, no shortage of books that have been written about advertising. Spengler, interestingly, I mean, he wrote early in the 20th century, in German, and late in the 19th century, and he was predicting basically a new form of feudalism. And oddly, he didn't see that as a bad thing because he thought of himself as an aristocrat. But his book, The Decline of the West, is still studied in universities. It's fascinating. And what he suggested was that cultures eventually go into what he called the classical phase, a hardening in the classical phase, where there's this stratification, a class stratification. And you have one class, which he called inform, which is like the ruling class, which holds the economic power. And then you have everybody else who has to work desperately for a living and has no power. And what he's describing basically is feudalism. And what has happened in the United States, particularly since the mid-70s, I would say, in large part, I mean, there's been this huge change just in the last three decades, is that the working class of America has gone from having some power and authority over their lives, particularly with the, you know, union jobs and things, to all of those good jobs being exported out of the United States, and people living in terror. And it's a new form of feudalism.